Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now to the Middle East, because talks in Doha on a deal for a ceasefire in Gaza and the release of Israeli hostages are in their final stages, we're being told, as a key mediator. Qatar says an agreement is very close. Meanwhile, the US Secretary of State Antony Blinken has said that it was up to Hamas to seal a Gaza ceasefire, saying a final proposal was on the table at the talks in Qatar. Speaking at the Atlantic Council think tank in Washington this afternoon, Secretary Blinken was interrupted by angry protesters who shouted at him before they were removed. He said he believed there will be a ceasefire, but said the ball was in Hamas's court.
It's right on the brink. It's closer than it's ever been before. But right now, as we sit here, we await final word from Hamas on its acceptance. And until we get that word, will remain on the brink. That could come anytime. It could come in the hours ahead. It could come in the days ahead. That's what we're looking for. But what we've done over the last weeks, and especially over the last days, has put it right there. And the deal is there. It's ready to be fully and finally accepted. It's ready to be implemented. But right now, we've got to wait to get a final word from Hamas.
And talks continue there with Secretary Antony Blinken. We'll get some analysis from Professor of International Relations at Chatham House and columnist with the Arab News, Yossi Meckelberg, in just a moment. But I'm joined for the latest by Leila Molana Allen, who's special correspondent with PBS NewsHour covering the Middle East. You're very welcome, Leila, to the programme. What is the latest you're hearing?
So it does seem that we are closer than we've been at any point during the war to a deal. There were a couple of really important kind of points that they were locked over, but we do seem to have got past those. Now, what's really important here is, of course, that Trump is coming into office, and that does seem to have been a deadline for many people. It's easy to think that the Biden administration, you know, is desperate to get a hostage deal before they leave as their kind of legacy, similar to, you know, what we saw with the Iran hostage deal decades ago. But actually, it's not just that they want to get the deal done. It's that both sides, the Israelis and Hamas, are not sure that the Trump administration coming in will stick to what the Biden administration have promised them and still be willing to foster this deal through. So it does seem to be in everyone's interest to try and get this through. Really importantly, for the first time throughout the war, both Hamas negotiators and Israeli negotiators have been in the same building during these talks. Not in the same room, but the same building, which has never happened before and does show a desire on both sides to get this done.
Do we have, or do we know what the framework of this deal, the nuts and bolts of it, look like?
We do. So it is based on the agreement that Biden proposed all the way back in last May. And the real couple of main sticking points were two things. Hamas was determined that all Israeli soldiers must leave the Gaza Strip, which they refused to do. And the Israelis were refusing to allow men to go back to northern Gaza. They both seem to have backed down on those things. The way this deal looks like it's going to go is that 34 hostages will be released, most of them living. About a third of the 94 hostages that are left are known to be dead, so there will be a few bodies included there. That will be in return for 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. They won't be released back into the West Bank. They will be released partly into Gaza and some to foreign countries with agreement of those nations. So what we're looking at is initially a 42-day deal, so 6 weeks for initial ceasefire. First, Hamas will release three hostages. Then, in response, some Israeli soldiers will withdraw. Then, a few days later, Hamas will release four more hostages. Then, in response, people will be allowed to start walking back on foot across the whole Gaza Strip with the cooperation of the Qataris and the Egyptians, who will be scanning these people as they go past to check they don't have weapons. And over these 6 weeks, that will continue to unfold. Once we reach 2 weeks into the deal, that's when they'll start talking about the next stages of the deal that could bring this war to a close. But that's where we're really going to hit sticking points again, because Hamas, again, saying that they will not step down, and the IDF and the Israeli government saying that there is no way this war will be brought to an end until Hamas is completely defeated. So we are at the moment looking at a temporary ceasefire, but it's one that will be incredibly welcome to the hostage families, to civilians in Gaza who have suffered so much, 46,500 civilians at least now dead in this war.
Mm-hmm. The stakes are huge. There's no question about it as you lay it out. Leila Molana, Alan, thank you very much indeed. Special correspondent with PBS NewsHour. Thank you for joining us. As I say, I'm joined as well by Professor of International Relations at Chatham House and columnist with Arab News, Yossi Mecklenburg. Professor Mecklenburg, you're very welcome. What's your assessment of what's happening this evening?
Good evening. Thank you for having me. I think it's an important development. Many of us will argue long overdue, because when one look at the, at least at what we know about the terms of the deal, it probably could have been achieved months ago. It's very similar to an agreement that was on the table back in May and was rejected, with a heavy price considering what happened in this intervening month, but. I think now it's time to welcome an agreement which, at least for 42 days, brings truth, brings some of the hostages, not all of them, back home. Will end the killing and the destruction in Gaza, and most importantly, is also the hope that it will create a new dynamic, a new momentum, which will lead, because in the 16th day of this truce, both sides are supposed to start the negotiation of phase B, and hopefully the momentum will be there. The minimum trust needed will be there in order to also agree on phase B.
Yeah, and that's kind of post-conflict Gaza, and who governs Gaza and who rebuilds Gaza as well. And that's a very, very difficult, expensive question. But can I bring you back to phase A and bring you back to May, Yossi, as well? If it transpires that the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, is willing to accept this deal, which is broadly similar to what we had in May, why now and why not in May?
So here comes the new factor in international affairs, and this is the re-election of President Trump. And there is little doubt that actually that he played a major role of that, though we are still dealing with the Biden administration. We've just heard Secretary of State Blinken. But the person behind it is already President Trump and his administration. He said time and again that he would like to see this resolved before the 20th of January when he assumed power. And he sent this special envoy to speak also to Prime Minister Netanyahu, and it seems to do the trick. I think generally, not only in this case, but in other issues internationally, people try to second guess what President Trump is expected of them and start to behave accordingly, rightly or wrongly. In this case, I think the result is positive.
That's the mood music, but it may not transpire like that. What happens if Benjamin Netanyahu and his right-wing colleagues in government say, let's tough this out, let's call Donald Trump's bluff here, because there is no way in hell, is there, that he will not support the Jewish or Israeli lobby within the United States and calls from Israel for support in the face of terrorism from Hamas or Hezbollah and the threat of Iran?
You see, what sometimes is scary about Trump, but also sometimes works for him, is his unpredictability. And again, the expectation of how he would behave or might behave. And I think in this case of Netanyahu, because he really wanted, this was his wish for Trump to win the election. And he might react not in a way that's, as you suggest, he might, because of his unpredictability, react exactly the opposite. That's what he wants to happen. If it doesn't happen, he will react in a way that, you know, it would upset him. Now, I think that in many ways there is another aspect here. Netanyahu always, if you look at the history of Netanyahu in power, many times he used, so to speak, the United States or the pressure from the United States to justify to the right wing in Israel why he operates in a certain way. It didn't have, there was not enough pressure from the Biden administration for him to go back to government and says we are risking our relations with our major backer when it comes politically, militarily, diplomatically. He can use this because he knows as much as anyone else that Israel is has entered already into a never-ending war, that it achieved almost nothing from continuing this war politically.
But I mean, in many ways, there are some who suggest that he continue this war even up until now because of for personal reasons, that he will be in an awful lot of trouble personally once the war comes to a conclusion. And we've seen members, politicians from the far right who are supporting his government saying they'll resign from government if he stops the war. Now, I just wonder, how will he weigh that up, Benjamin Netanyahu, do you think? Will he fall on the sword effectively?
That's, I think, where he miscalculated. And from his point of view, the Biden administration was easier for him to continue the war. And he needs the war to continue in order to, I mean, it's more convenient for him to deal with his legal affairs, his corruption trial, and then fend off criticism from the far right. This is exactly the conundrum. Can he survive politically in Israel while agreeing to this deal? But it's also a conundrum for the far right in Israel. If they bring to the collapse of this government, which is the most conducive to their interests, including the annexation of the West Bank, are they interested in fresh election? With all surveys, public opinion polls actually indicate that the opposition is going to win. Mm. So all of them really need to assess and reassess what works for them best and whether they are ready to create a new crisis or swallow what they are opposing.
Do you think Benjamin Netanyahu and this conflict has set Israeli-Palestinian relations back generations? And I know that's a leading question, but it's leading for 46,000 plus reasons.
I fully agree with you. I think if it's well, but let's not forget that it all started by a terrible massacre by Hamas.
Absolutely.
And and the disproportionate response by Israel made it even worse. So we have two sides that made it much worse for themselves in the long run. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that what started as a legitimate war against Hamas following October 7 turned into something completely different between that led to different objectives. For instance, reoccupying Gaza, rebuilding settlements in Gaza, prolonging the war, because it makes it easier for Netanyahu to deal with his corruption trial. So ulterior motives enter to what start when there was a casus belli at the beginning, but specifically to go after Hamas, ended in disproportionate war and response that kills so many innocent people. Yeah. This is unacceptable.
My final question to you is this, and you mentioned Phase B. Who will govern Gaza or the Palestinian territory or Palestine once this conflict has been resolved, this current conflict? Because you mentioned the unspeakable massacre perpetrated by Hamas on October 7th. And Israeli people might rightly say, we don't want Hamas in power anywhere near us.
Correct. And to a certain extent, to best of my understanding, Hamas and Islamic Jihad understand that they need at least for a while to have a government of technocrats. At the end of the day, the West Bank and Gaza should be governed by the same government, and a government eventually be elected by the Palestinian people in Gaza, in the West Bank. Again, election for the PA is long overdue. This is part of the process. In the interim time, there should be a government of technocrats. It should be supported by regional powers, and then move towards rebuilding Gaza, reforming the PA institution. Israel probably should have an election as soon as possible, and then moving to deal with the bigger picture of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Well, we know in this part of the world that it's step by step. There was a cessation of violence in Northern Ireland before we got to power sharing, before we got to justice and where that would be ruled from and governed from and so on. Let's hope the first step is a good one and a fruitful one.
Indeed.
In Doha, and that it comes soon, there's a ceasefire. Professor Yossi Meckelberg, Professor of International Relations with Chatham House and columnist with Arab News. Thank you very much indeed.